Francis Huynh has a low tolerance for dummies. As deputy editor of the British magazine Private Eye and as a writer for publications like Vanity Fair, The New Yorker, and London's Guardian, he has often lampooned the famous and foolish. In a new book, everyone from Deepak Chopra to Margaret Thatcher to Francis Fukuyama is targeted with a take-no-prisoners writing style. Joining us now from our bureau in New York is Francis Huynh, author of Idiot Proof, Deluded Celebrities, Irrational Power Brokers, Media Morons, and the Erosion of Common Sense. That's quite a mouthful. Francis, thanks for joining us.
Well, I'm very impressed that you got through the subtitle well, pausing for breath.
Well,
thank you very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure, and particularly after reading some of your book, to find that this is not just a bashing of fools, entertaining as that in itself may be, but a defense of the Enlightenment.
Very much so, yes. I mean, it's not. I think perhaps the title might mislead some people, or the subtitle, into thinking it's another of those, you know, lying lies and the lying liars who tell them, or whatever, one of the knockabout Al Franken, Ann Coulter type things, which it certainly is not. I mean, there's plenty of humour in there, partly because it is about absurdity in all its guises, and absurdity tends to be quite comic. But it does have a serious purpose, as you say. It's actually about the retreat from reason. The decline of, not just the decline of Enlightenment values, but the active hostility of many people now to what's seen as the Enlightenment legacy or Enlightenment values, secularism, liberalism, scientific empiricism, that sort of thing. I think there's been a strange sort of ganging up by both pre-modernists and post-modernists on what they see as modernity Enlightenment values of the kind I just described. I mean, a sort of strange coalition between everyone from the Taliban to sort of primitivists, deep green earth-firsters who think that the invention of the plough was probably rather a bad thing. All these pre-modernists allied with post-modernists. I mean, you can't call it a coalition. They don't work together. But the one thing they all seem to agree on, it struck me, because I was trying to write a book about big ideas of the last 25 years, and I was amazed by how many of these ideas and movements were united by their hatred for the Enlightenment and their determination to end it.
And you trace the beginning of this counter-Enlightenment to 1979, and to you begin with two individuals, otherwise not often mentioned in the same breath, the Ayatollah Khomeini and Margaret Thatcher.
Yes, not often mentioned in the same breath. I don't believe they ever met either.
I'm not sure, no.
But it did seem to me it was a turning point. And I mean, of course, it's slightly artificial, but you have to start somewhere. And it seemed to me it was a very good point to start because it did change things, and the Ayatollah came back on the 1st of February to Tehran from exile. The Iranian Revolution then kick-started the whole new wave of militant Islamism, which has since spread and taken different forms, with which we're very well aware. And then 3 months later, Margaret Thatcher moved into 10 Downing Street, quoting St. Francis of Assisi, as I remember, rather implausibly, and kick-started the whole Reagan-Thatcher revolution, the new free market orthodoxy, all the rest of it, which has since again been spread to all sorts of places by people like the International Monetary Fund. Well, and it seemed to be those two big ideas, if you can call them that, did dominate the next quarter of a century. They were the two dominant ideas. I mean, there were all sorts of other ideas that came and went, the end of history, the third way, all sorts of other things. But it seemed to me they did represent a change, and it was a good point to start in writing about ideas over this period.
How does an attack on, I'm saying government's too big and taxes are too high, represent an attack on the Enlightenment?
Well, it doesn't entirely. Thatcher is perhaps a more complicated example because she claimed to be a disciple of Adam Smith, who was himself a great Enlightenment thinker. But it did seem to me that a lot of what she went in for was, well, partly she wanted to turn the clock back. She only wanted to go back as far as the 19th century to what she called Victorian values, capitalism, red in tooth and claw, no welfare, no trade unions, no mixed economy, whereas people like the Ayatollah wanted to go back about 1,500 years. But they did agree on their dislike of the way things had turned out in the 20th century. And I think also, actually, there was an element, an increasing element of mysticism about that form of market worship that, well, you remember George Bush, the first George Bush, called it voodoo economics when he was running against Ronald Reagan in the primaries.
This was the Laffer curve.
Yes, the Laffer curve. Then, of course, he became Reagan's running mate and had to implement these, what he called voodoo economics. But I always thought it was a very good phrase and just about right for this mystical Laffer curve. So there was an element of superstition about it. And you know that book by Thomas Frank, Tom Frank, One Market Under God? I mean, that's full of examples of how it almost literally, the market did become a kind of modern deity, you know, immortal, invisible, omnipresent, all the rest of it, moving in a mysterious way, its wonders to perform, and almost taking on these godlike characteristics. Oh, the market is angry today, almost, you know, throwing thunderbolts down. And And I did. I think it did depart quite early on from any connection with rational assessment. I mean, there's a whole argument about rational markets and whether there are such things as rational markets. But I think what we've witnessed over this period, particularly with things like the dot-com mania, is not since the South Sea bubble has there been such a tremendous example of collective hysteria and madness in the market, but all part of this this grand new belief that the market will never let you down and the market is always right.
Some of the foolishness, deluded celebrities and irrational power brokers you talk about, you describe as rather silly when she was First Lady Nancy Reagan's astrologer, for example. Others you describe, though, as sinister. Who, and sinister in what respect?
Well, if you look at them individually, a lot of these delusions, I mean, like Nancy Reagan and her astrology, seem to be harmless fun, harmless pastimes. But the trouble is they are contagious. My feeling is that when people succumb to some delusions, they're far more susceptible to others. And when they become contagious, when large numbers of people are swept up in them, they can become rather less harmless. I mean, in Britain, we had our moment of Princess Diana mania back in 1997 when she died, and the whole country went into a kind of collective fit of sentimental hysteria. And it did become sort of slightly tyrannical after a bit. I mean, even the Queen got it in the neck. The British tabloids started attacking her for not emoting openly enough, not crying in public and wailing and ululating, saying, "Come on, Your Majesty, show some grief." And anyone who didn't join in on the same level of intensity was vilified. And I thought at the time this could be harnessed to quite nasty purposes. And sure enough, about 3 years later, the biggest selling British Sunday tabloid started printing all the names and addresses of every known paedophile in Britain. And, of course, their readers then formed lynch mobs and went round to lynch these people, except that the names and addresses would quite often be, you know, Mr. Smith who lives near Reading or something like that. So they were all a bit vague. So anyone called Smith who lived in that general area would then have his house burnt down, window smashed. And in Private Eye, this satirical magazine I work for, we had a cartoon at the time showing a man running from one of these lynch mobs, saying, "But I keep telling you, I'm a paediatrician." And as ever with satire, reality catches up. Well, the day after that appeared in Wales, a genuine female paediatrician was driven out of her house by one of these lynch mobs who spray-painted "pedo" on the front of it. So illiteracy and mass hysteria, terrifying combination. And it did rather confirm my feeling that these things may be harmless in small individually, but when they become a collective movement, I mean, they can easily end up in Nuremberg rallies, if you like.
Francis Wheen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Francis Wheen is the author of Idiot Proof, Deluded Celebrities, Irrational Power Brokers, Media Morons, and the Erosion of Common Sense. He joined us from our bureau in New York. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.